time now for Connecting the Diocese. Connecting the Diocese is a production of the Diocese of La Crosse. Here's host Jack Silsha.
Thank you for joining us on Connecting the Diocese. You know, in the world of commercial radio, especially if it's some kind of talk show, they tend to have things happen where they say, coming up a little later on in the show, you're going to get to hear for the first time, you know, fill in the blank. And of course, the special thing they want you to stand by for always is at the end of the show, because that will keep you listening for the entire hour. Well, I don't do that kind of thing here, but I will tell you this. We're doing a show now. We're going to be talking with a gentleman by the name of Andrew Brigham, who's new to the Curious staff, and I think you're going to really enjoy hearing about what he's doing. But at the end of the show, I'm not making this up, he dropped the bomb on me that just bowled me over completely with joy. Nothing bad. One of those true great stories that sticks with you and is right there if you need a little bit of something to make you think that God is good and all is well with the world. So if you can, stick around. I think you're going to enjoy it. Back after this. I'm sure many of you have heard of the online video streaming business called TikTok. It is originated in the People's Republic of China, and there is an American division, of course, that oversees operations here. Well, I was listening to BBC News this week, and they had done an investigation of TikTok, mostly in Europe, and they said that what was going on was there was some kind of a charity to try to get help and money to refugees from Syria. And it gleaned quite a bit of money over time. But it was then discovered that TikTok took 70% of all the money that was donated. So if you gave $100 to this charity, TikTok got 70 of it, and $30 went to the organization. And then after they paid for their executive salaries and who knows what else, almost nothing got to the people who needed it in the refugee camps. Of course, when confronted, TikTok said it was all a terrible mistake. This charity thing should never have been allowed on. It was against their policies, yada, yada, yada. But they still failed to mention what cut they actually got. I do not know if this affected the American operation, but my point is simply this. Right now, there's a lot of places that need a lot of help around the world, and also right here in the good old USA. And you're suddenly going to be getting, and online and in your mailbox and elsewhere, you are going to be getting inundated with requests to give money for good causes. Let's just say that some of these good causes are gooder than others. You cannot go wrong with things like the Bishop's Annual Appeal. You cannot go wrong with going to Catholic Relief Services, Lutheran Social Services, Catholic Charities, and basically any religiously supported charity from a genuine religious organization. You can go to places like Charity Watch or do a little bit of research online to see how much percentage of your money is used for upkeep and salaries and how much actually gets to the people they claim they are serving. So this time of year, give generously, but give wisely. Check out who you're giving it to before you write the check or give them your credit card number. And again, thanks for your generosity. Well, as promised, someone I have not had on again. This is kind of like old home week getting around here. Andrew Brigham, who is now working for the Diocese of La Crosse in the Curious staff. Andrew, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me back, Jack. It's good to be talking with you again. It's been a while.
Last time we talked, you were working in youth ministry at a parish. Your buddy, Chris Rogers, was the youth minister here, basically working for the youth department. You guys had a band. And you were practicing in a garage, and that kind of got put aside because of COVID and all this stuff going on. But now you are a member of the gang here.
It's been a crazy time since the last time we've talked, going from youth ministry and doing that sort of thing. And it's been great, right? I had a good 14-year run, which is longer than many youth ministers. But over COVID and things like that, I just got to be thinking, you know, it was really nice to be home with a family. Youth ministry is a taxing job. You know, I was starting that before I was married, and so I was gone nights and weekends, and, you know, it was okay. But then all of a sudden kids start getting thrown into the picture, and you realize at night that's when your spouse needs you the most, trying to put them to bed. I was gone a lot of nights, and so I was thinking, man, I was like, it would be nice to be able to find something with a more steady schedule. And lo and behold, Father Nate and I, we are good friends, have been since he was chaplain at Aquinas. And we were out golfing one day and just talking, and he was telling me about what he was doing. I was telling him about what I was doing, and I was like, man, it sounds like you could use some help down there. And that's all it took, right? And it was just like one of those like, yeah, okay, I'll say it. And then all of a sudden he's like, you know what? I'm gonna go talk to the bishop. And lo and behold, next thing I know is he goes, yeah, the bishop says it's a great idea. I'm like, well, that's a great idea. He's like, that you come and you help me out. I was like, okay, all right. It was absolutely insane. In the span of like 3 weeks or so, I went from having a youth ministry job to all of a sudden being set up and accepted as the associate director of vocational formation for the Diocese of La Crosse. So again, crazy how it happened. God works in some crazy ways. I am happy where I'm at now for sure.
How old are your kids?
Yeah, so I have a 7-year-old, a 3-year-old, and a 1-year-old.
Wow.
We just, yeah, our last two we adopted right before COVID and right after COVID. So, you know, one of those COVID.
And they need their daddy at home.
Yeah, I was going to say, our kids are all energy all the time. You can ask any of my family, that sort of thing. Anybody that's seen us at church, when we've St. Elizabeth's or St. Pat's, they know my family because they are alive and they are yelling, praising God. We're seeing they're praising God as best as they can. So,
but also, you know, this has been a difficult couple of years. Obviously, for the 1-year-old, they missed half of it. But for the older ones, you know, with the schools shut down here and there, and this remote learning, and all these things going on, and just general anxiety about stuff happening. You know, their kids can sense things, and even if they don't understand fully what's going on, and boy, having parents to tell them. It's okay. So it's so important. Be home. It's like wonderful for you. It's really good. We do have such strange things. Did you ever think years ago when you were starting out doing youth ministry at a parish that you would be doing what you're doing now?
Oh, absolutely not. And, you know, I had the privilege of talking in front of all the priests at the fall clergy days here at the diocese. And it was almost surreal to me standing up in front of them. And, you know, I kind of made a little offhanded joke. I went, you know, I know most of you through my entire life. And, you know, a lot of them thought that at one point I would be sitting with them with a collar. So I discerned a priesthood and I kind of was talking with vocations directors, became very close with a lot of priests growing up. And little did I know that I would be in this position of helping form and helping our young men discern what God's call is to them in their life. And again, it's almost weird in a way, you know, having a married layman help these young men discern priesthood. But at the same time, right, what is formation? We are just helping them find what God is calling them to, right? God willing, we hope that that's priesthood. But at the same time, if they go through the program, that is going to make them into the best possible husbands that they could be, men that are going to be leaders within their church. That's our goal.
Well, we had Barb Swieziak on last week explaining what a consecrated virgin in the world is, which, you know, is a mouthful. But she said something in a previous show about how everyone has a vocation. It could be a vocation to priesthood. It could be a vocation to religious life. It could be a vocation to family. But it's always, it's a vocation. It's something that you are tasked to do or chosen to do. And it takes us down strange, strange paths. I never in my wildest dreams would believe that we have done more than 500 shows for the Diocese of La Crosse, you know, basically 10 years worth of stuff, talking to people about all the different things that this diocese does. And you're part of it. Must be an exciting world for you because you must get all kinds of inquiries. Father Nate is busy too. You know, he's doing lots of stuff and you can kind of take some of the first calls, I suppose. Is that what you do? How do you handle that when somebody first contacts the diocesan center saying, I'm interested in getting more information about priesthood? What's the first step that happens?
You know, usually people find us through word of mouth or whatever it is. You know, they go talk to their priest. They have a calling on their own heart. They go talk to their priest and their priest calls us up and says, hey, I got this young man that I think would be perfect for your program. And so they get in touch with Father Nate and myself. We set up a day for them to be able to come down. We chat with them ourselves. They come down. They see what it's like being with the guys, what a 24-hour day is like, you know, our come and see days, come and see weekends we have set up also for some of the guys. You know, just being a part of the program like that, they get to see what it's like being here for a day. Usually that inspires them in one way, shape, or form. You know, and if we're not in session like during the summer, the one thing that we did that was huge in my life growing up was we used to do what was called Dare to Follow Days. That was back like when a bunch of priests would put together like almost like a vocations weekend for a bunch of us young men. I was talking to Father Nate about it. I said, man, that was huge in my life growing up. And I think just having that presence, and it wasn't the fact that we necessarily learned anything theological at Dare to Follow Days, but it was a time for us to come together in prayer as young men. And I was in middle school, high school at this time. And I got to hang out with priests in a non-liturgical setting, right? I just remember like having ice cream with Father Potashik and being able to talk in with Father Monsignor Gillis. Now we had captured a flag out at Father Sam Martin's house, like it were his hometown growing up. Like those are the things that I remember, having those human interactions with the priests. And the same thing for us, they get in touch with us, we want them to be able to see the human side of formation also. Like we're not, you come to the program like, well, you thinking like you could join our program, you have to be a priest. We just want them to be able to contact us. We want to walk with them, help them find God's call for them, whatever that may be. And so for those Dare to Follow days, we have those set up in the summer that we're going around the diocese. We started this last year, go around the diocese and put on 6 different Dare to Follow days in which parishes will host. And we had over 50 young men come join us for this last summer, which is amazing. You know, God willing, all those men to serve in the priesthood, man, this place would be overflowing, which would be amazing.
Yeah, that would be wonderful. 50 guys who are sensing some kind of tug. And, you know, it remains to be seen which direction that will take them, but you just never can tell. I guess one thing that's kind of amusing is that I'm sure a bunch of people, you know, who have never talked to a priest, really never seen a priest except maybe sitting in a pew looking at them, think that, you know, well, the priest does homilies on Sunday, maybe goes to a pancake breakfast, does some weddings, gets really busy for a week or two around Christmas. Yeah, not much else.
it's just that.
Yeah, it was like my first job as a disc jockey. I was in Menominee, and I thought basically all I had to do was go on the air for 4 hours and, you know, do my disc jockey stuff and go home. No, you had to record commercials, you had to write commercials, you had to work on all kinds of other stuff around the station in addition to doing your 4 hours on the air, which is what you see out there. You don't see all the other stuff that's going on. I've said so often that these priests, if they were CEOs of corporations, would do extremely well because they can do so many different tasks. They have to handle all kinds of human interactions, financial stuff, dealing with the roof leaking, you know, where's the plunger for the restroom? Oh my gosh. They have to do everything and know where it is and do it with a certain amount of charm at the same time. And it's a lot of work. You have a program that is going on, it's been on for some time now, called the Journey Program. Can you, again, explain for the folks who haven't heard this before, what the Journey Program is?
One of the cool things, just this last year, all the vocations directors, bishops from around the world got together, and they have this program for priestly formation known as the PPF. And within that, one of the things, and this is really cool about Bishop Callahan, is that he was ahead of the curve. He was very integral in this, what's called a propedeutic year, which is just, it's just fancy, right? We like using big terms in the church. Propedeutic year is just a year of discernment, right? So it's almost like a novitiate. Like if somebody's going to the religious, becoming a sister or a brother, they have a year of novitiate or so before entering fully or taking their vows. And for our guys, like we just call them to, you know, because it's a big step. Jumping out of the world from what they're used to. A lot of these guys are either in college, just graduated college. They have a full-time job, and all of a sudden they feel this call, and it's like they just got to like leave everything, right? Just like the apostles, they got to leave everything behind and go discern God's call. And so Bishop Callahan was forward-thinking on this, and he's like, you know what? We should have a year in which guys come down and truly just take a year of discernment, not a year necessarily of seminary, right? Our guys in the program in our Diocese of La Crosse, they're not seminarians yet. They're discerning to join the seminary instead of just jumping right into seminary. And what we do here at the program is that this year is dedicated to really 4 major areas of growth. Intellectual growth. We have classes. I'm the teacher here, professor, whatever you want to call it, the educator, the guy, in which we go over various classes, going over scripture. We're walking our way through scripture. We're doing catechism classes, apologetics. We're doing liturgical readings. And then we have Chris Carson's, which is a great resource to be able to have. He's over here teaching liturgy to our guys and what the liturgy looks like, which is amazing, right? So you have the intellectual. You have the pastoral. Our guys are constantly talking with their spiritual directors. Each guy is a spiritual director. And every 1 to 2 weeks, they get together with them and they are learning how to manage their own spiritual life and what it looks like to be a good priest. We assign them to their home parishes. They are kind of like job shadowing a priest there. We send them out to random parishes in the diocese, and they get to see what it's like in these other parishes that maybe they're not familiar with. Kind of because, again, you and I know this, Jack, not every church in the diocese or even like, again, yeah, the diocese, but even in the world or even in a town, every church has its own unique culture. And we want the guys to be able to experience that from what they're used to. So you have the pastoral, you have the spiritual, like I said, with spiritual direction. The guys wake up every morning at 7 o'clock and they are down here for an hour of adoration. They have a holy hour every morning. We teach them how to do liturgy of the hours, doing morning, evening, and night prayer together as a group. After the holy hour, they celebrate mass together as a group. And then there's various times to be able to grow in their prayer life there. And so we look at these pillars, and these are huge in being able to help a person, right? Because the final pillar is the human formation. We set aside many, like a number of hours to be able to help them grow as a person. We have professional counseling being done. One thing that I love exercise, athletics, things like that. We have a gym downstairs in the basement so that the guys can stay physical. Because again, we want, if they're going to be priests, they're going to be, you know, doing lunges and kneeling and all that stuff, you know, throughout their entire life. We want them to be fit priests too.
That's a good idea.
Formation there. We have what are called apostolics, in which we send them out to the various schools within La Crosse boundaries. And the Catholic school is there for little kids and high schoolers and middle schoolers so they can have that human interaction with them there. And then we set aside a time on Mondays in which we do human formation, in which, you know, just helping them become the best possible person that God is calling them to be. So I'm telling you, it's a great program. It absolutely is.
It's the kind of thing where you wish that this was available, you know, the same format was available for many, many other occupations as well, where you could find it, you know, before you took a job in retail management or before you took a job in some kind of industry, you have a chance to do. And they do have apprenticeship programs. Some of the colleges do work with corporations and things ahead of time. But when I went to the military intelligence school to be an analyst, I had dreams it was going to be, you know, not James Bond stuff, but really cool stuff, right? And then they assigned me to the Pentagon, and I go, oh, this is really going to be great. I can imagine the Lucite maps lit up and all this stuff you see in the movies, right?
Yeah.
I'll never forget my heart kind of sinking when they opened up this combination lock door to let me into this intelligence shop, and here a bunch of guys smoking cigarettes typing on IBM's electric typewriters. It was kind of like, wait a minute, this isn't cool. It was important, and we were involved in very important stuff, but it really wasn't in any way, shape, or form mildly even glamorous. Nothing at all. Period. End of story. And it's a kind of the same thing. Every once in a while, you think something is going to be a certain way, you know, that I'm going to go to seminary and become a super priest. And you realize that maybe you will. But also, you also have to do a lot of good everyday stuff that's just as important as any you know, fantastic, earth-shaking thing that you could come up with. There's plenty of excitement going on. Look at these people at Casa Hogar. Father Walieski, who had a dream of a vocation to do missionary work, and he finally got to do it. And when he finally got to do what he was doing, boom, I'll tell you, he became a real rock star, and maybe someday will become a saint. You know, we've got Monsignor Hirsch down there, and he's loving it. And also, just recently, at the rededication of the cathedral, Monsignor Gillis thanked the bishop. He says, "This, I've loved doing this past couple of years." And people applauded, and then he said, no, to the people in the pews, no, applaud yourself for what you've done. I mean, it was a great moment. You could just see that he was loving what he was doing. And I'm sure that what will happen is over a period of time, these people will find their niches, the things they really, really love doing. By giving them a chance to experience it ahead of time, to get a better flavor for it, that gives them a better idea of what it's like where the rubber meets the road, as they used to say. So how long have you been doing this now?
Honestly, it's only been since July. So I started early July and just been kind of going since then. But I mean, yeah, you're 100% correct, Jack. Like, you know, I think about it as I was discerning priesthood and my vocations directors, I drove them insane because I would always be like, yeah, you know what? I think this is a year. And I get all signed up. And this was back when they had the high school house of formation here at the diocese. I remember with Father Sam Martin, I was all signed up. And then all of a sudden I was like, no. And then like going up to the college seminary, I thought, yeah, you know what? I'm going to do this. Went up, visited, all signed up, and I backed out because I really needed that year of being able to mature and grow in my own faith to be able to discern. And so like if this would have been around, like maybe my story would have been a little bit different. Maybe I would be a priest. So that's why I think I'm all in on this program for what it's doing for these guys, because like I said, it is just helping them become the best. And these last couple months, it's been a little bit crazy little bit crazy at the house here. You know, I wasn't expecting my first month, and then all of a sudden I turned out I had to go in for surgery, so that thrown it off. And now Father Nate, poor guy, anybody listening to this, like, throw some prayers Father Nate's way. He just he has to go in for surgery. So I don't know what's going on, but you know what, I've been in youth ministry long enough. If roadblocks keep coming up like that, it means we're doing something right, right?
I trust you're doing okay from whatever surgery it was for, that you're doing well, and hopefully Father Nate will be doing well. It's good. That's, yeah, you guys, you know, we had Chris, your buddy Chris Rogers on a few times ago, and he just casually mentioned, you know, I hadn't talked to him for a while, and he says, well, you know, after I had my stroke, and I go, what? Well, hold on, stop the show. You had a what? And he went through this whole story, which was magnificent, about how he couldn't read and he couldn't talk. And he's lying there going, God, you know, he says he felt like the evil one was telling him, your life is over. You never can do what you're going to do. And he was lying there in the bed, and he told me, he said, that I just said, look, even if I am stuck this way for the rest of my life, I still have Jesus with me. And the next morning, he was able to read a little bit, and he got out his cell phone and was looking at email, and he was being able to read more and more. And obviously, his voice returned. He's able to speak because I had him on the radio show. You never would have known it. But wow. I mean, the challenges that people get. You get it, everybody. Father Nate gets it. Everybody walking around, half the people listening to the show right now have been through some kind of amazing thing in the past 2 years with COVID-19. It's amazing the hurdles that we get. But the other thing is that you're talking about, you were a young kid, you know, in high school. As a guy who used to be 17, 18, and 19, most of us really didn't have our heads screwed on straight yet. You know, there's a few who do, who know exactly what they're going to do and they follow through. But most of us kind of like, I want to be a whatever, you know. It's better than saying I want to be a cowboy. Then again, there are some who wanted to be cowboys and became cowboys. But it's difficult because you really don't know exactly what you haven't formed it yet. They're now saying that a lot of part of the brain, especially in young males for some reason, doesn't really mature tremendously until they get into their early 20s. It begins to solidify or something like that. So this is good. What is the average age of a person who contacts you now?
Yeah, so you know what? You brought up a great point, the whole maturing of the brain. I mean, that's true. I've lived that. And for our guys, and this is just a trend throughout the entire United States, is that the average age of a man entering is 25 and older now. So, right, it's like they go through college. Usually the route is they go through college, they get a job, and then all of a sudden they realize they're like, man, God is calling me to something else. And so that's what we're seeing. 25 and older is what we are commonly seeing within the programs itself, not just here, but throughout the United States as a whole.
I think that's a good thing. I'm not saying that it's bad if you're at 19 and you really feel the call, but it does save everybody involved a certain amount of time. You know, my joke, and I hate to keep talking about the Army because it was so long ago, but it, one of the feelings of going in for 3 years right out of high school was that, you know, you do some of your maturing on the Army's time. Basically, you know, and it was a good deal for everybody concerned. And I walked out of it after 3 years a better person than when I was going in. And so that's a rough time, the 18 to 22 or whatever it is. You can make a tremendous number of poor judgments. On the other hand, you know, you'll find people, we've heard about some of our priests we've talked to who, from the time they were little kids, you know, they were borrowing some kind of a wine glass or something and Necco wafers and playing priest. It just happens. So you're saying now their average is around 25. When they call up, do they contact you kind of sheepishly, or what do they say to you? What's the first thing they say when you answer the phone?
Yeah, so a lot of times, hi, this is, you know, so-and-so at this parish, and our priest of our parish, you know, he told me to reach out to you because thinks maybe I have a call to priesthood, something like that. And, you know, so it, in a way, it's a little sheepish, especially the younger ones. Like, we do have in the program now, we have a couple of guys that are 18, 19. And so, you know, you see that with a lot of the younger guys per se, but then because it's almost like college for them. It's fun watching the parents drop them off because it, you know, reminded me of when I got dropped off college with my parents, and it's a good time. But with the older ones, you see that there's a conviction, right? They've gone through something and they are really convicted in what God is calling them to, at least to be here, right? Whether it's a priesthood or not, that's to be determined. But for them to be here in the program with these other men, Like God's calling them here for a specific purpose for this time. So yeah, you do see it's a little bit different there, but yet at the same time, you know, one of the guys in the program, he, even though he's 18, like, man, this guy is convicted, and you know, if God willing comes, he's going to be a fantastic priest, along with, you know, any of these guys could be also at the same time.
Yeah, the thing is, like, I shouldn't disparage all 18-year-olds by any means, but there are these ones that, you know, that just, it seems like from the get-go, they really, really know what they want to do. And it's interesting, regardless of what age it is, that right now, at this, as they used to say, at this point in time, the world is so misunderstanding of people who are trying to understand their connection with God. Boy, I'll tell you, you tell somebody that you work with the Catholic Church, or you work with the Lutheran Church, or you work at a synagogue, it doesn't matter what it is, they will sometimes look at you funny. Like, why would you want to do that? And it's kind of like, you know, it's kind of like, are you completely colorblind? You don't see all the colors? We're seeing all the colors. And these people are seeing part of the world that so much of the world is either ignoring or is rejecting, or in some cases, literally running away from, at a time when it is so badly needed. We need priests. We need people of holy values and virtues who do good work. So it's a wonderful thing that's going on. Do these people ever talk to you about how their friends and parents, everybody involved with their life, reacts to their decisions?
Yes. You know, it's another one of those grab bags, depending on a person's background and where they came from, you know, that where they were in school. You know, a lot of the guys that I've talked to, they almost have like a reversion of sorts, right, in college. You know, and I'm going to shout out Focus here. Focus on the university campuses. They are like the guys that are in the program. I know at least two or three of them. It was their experience with Focus that really brought them back, and the discipleship that they got there, that somebody took the time to walk with them one-on-one and bring them back and show them the mystery and the goodness of the faith. And so you see that, and they have a good support group behind them, right? They become friends. And so they're so supportive of their vocation. You know, there's some that they're like, yeah, I tried telling my friends that I was doing this, and it was almost like, why, like what you said, Jack, right? It's almost like crazy. Why would you do something like that? Why would you give up a life and kids? Why would you give up a full-time, like a well-paying job? Why would you give up these things, right? For something that you don't even really know about. So you do see a little bit of that misunderstanding from the people that are, you know, looking from the outside, just being like, I don't get it. And then, you know, they come here and yeah, they have their doubts and, you know, gosh, am I doing the right thing? And I tell you, like, it is amazing in just my couple months of being here and watching how these guys, especially those guys that come from a background that they're like, yeah, you know, I don't really have a good support base at home, but the guys here, like, they almost become like real brothers to them.
Sure.
And being able to lift them up in those times of like doubt, and they're like, I can really lean on them.
And the funny thing is that you'll also find naysayers almost any time when you've got a fire in your belly about doing something. When I went into broadcasting, people said, oh, broadcasting, there's no security in that. That was in 1980, and I'm still doing it. Well, here's the thing, is that let's just pretend that some of these guys get ordained next year. Okay, this is hypothetical. 30, 40 years from now, they will have influenced hundreds, if not thousands, of people. And they'll still be doing it where people like, well, for example, Elon Musk will just be a footnote. It's as simple as that. Okay, he's got billions of dollars and he's shooting people into space and it's kind of interesting. But 30 years from now, 40 years from now, 50 years from now, okay, you know, yeah, what about it? Congratulations, you did all that stuff. Meanwhile, Father so-and-so will be working with people who are in need, who need spiritual comfort, who will celebrate with them, who will cry with them, who will lift them up continuously every week. So you weigh those two together. This is why I'm really much happier talking to people who are interested in their pursuing their own spiritual life and path and their vocation than I am talking to some business leader. Granted, there are some business leaders who do great things, the servant leadership program that goes on locally and things like that. But in the long run, along, well, really, the priesthood and religious, the people they will affect will be much more profound in most cases, you know, unless, of course, they find a cure for cancer or something like that. But even that, compared to that, that's important, obviously. But by golly, when you think about what these people have done in their careers, our senior priests, our senior religious, it's unbelievable. There's just no end to it. I was one sister who now passed a long time ago, but Sister Janine Luger used to be an RCIA, and she's very quiet. And one day I was talking to her, and she mentioned that back when she was teaching English in sub-Saharan Africa, I said, "Excuse me, you were doing what?"
Yeah, right.
And this is back in this is back at a time when, you know, because of the situations going on there, they were not real happy about having a lot of Christians down there, and they were not happy about women down there, and they were not happy about women teaching down there. And she's teaching English in sub-Saharan Africa. And I used to kind of drop that in when we were introducing ourselves at RCIA, and you'd see the mouths drop open of the people coming to visit, because here's this quiet little sister sitting there, you know, down there. My mouth hit the floor practically when that happened. But if you talk to any priest, senior priest, a current priest who is still active, you will be amazed at some of the stuff they have done on the local level, on the international level. It's all equally valuable. And it's a part of the whole thing that I think you guys are trying to show. I mean, this is not, you don't get a lot of PR. There's not a lot of movies out there about things that priests do that are, you know, there's a few, but not as many as we'd like, or that people of any religious basis like. We're not in that stage right now where we try the best PR we can. But by golly, if you get to work with these people every day, as you have been doing for years, and I have been doing now for a number of years, you see the absolute necessity to have this as part of our world right now.
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. You know, I think as you were talking, you know, I was just thinking back to, as I was talking in front of all the priests the other day, that, you know, looking out there, I saw the priest that baptized me, the priest that gave me first communion, first confession, confirmation, the one that was presiding over our wedding, right? That's a huge impact in just my life. And, you know, I don't think they get to hear it enough. I don't think they get to hear it enough of how amazing they actually are within our lives. And like you said, yeah, right, there isn't a lot of good PR out there. Usually the priests are the butt of every joke that you see, and, you know, kind of whatever, how they're portrayed on media. And so the fact that these young men are able to look past that because of a witness, of an example of a priest, and, you know, this is how we kind of start the year here, is I have them think about an encounter or an experience with a priest that was so positive that led them to think about where they are right now, right? Yeah. And every guy can name an exact time, and it, you know, yeah, some of them you do got, oh, I remember that I was serving for this priest at Mass, and, you know, but it was the conversations afterwards that they had in the sacristy. It was when they would come over and hang out with them at the family meal. You know, it's those sort of things, those experiences that really drive these young men to desire what a good holy life looks like in these priests. And like you said, yeah, you're friends with a lot of priests. I mean, it's all like my phone, like you just type in FR for the contacts, and all of a sudden I'm like, oh geez, I got a whole list of priests I got to go through, which is a good problem to have, right? Like, yeah, the godfather to our daughter, like it's a priest, Father Becker. And so, you know, they're so integral in my life. And it's almost, for me, it's odd when somebody doesn't have that relationship, right? That doesn't have that relationship with their parish priest, because for me growing up, every parish priest was like part of the family. They'd come to birthdays, they'd come to Christmas celebrations at our extended family house. That's just what it was. And so I really hope that these guys, you know, as we're working with them and we're forming them, that they remember that witness that they have. And we tell them before they go out to their various assignments, I said, you don't understand the witness, like what you guys are doing in these schools is going to have an impact on some of these young men, even young women, of thinking that the priesthood is like, it's a good thing, that the church is a good thing. And that's because of you just playing kickball with them sometimes. It's powerful stuff.
Yeah. And also, you know, just the whole idea that having an inner life, considering thinking about what your religious beliefs are, is important. I mean, there are people out there who know absolutely nobody to talk to about religious stuff. You know, they're just totally in a secular world, and they pushed it all aside for whatever reason. And so to have even if it's a kid in high school or middle school, maybe they don't have a vocation to the priesthood or religious, but the fact that they suddenly realize that that's a part of their life that needs to be recognized and explored is a major victory right there. You're talking about bad PR or good PR. Years ago, I gave the bishop a DVD movie. It was from, believe it or not, the Hallmark Channel.
All right.
And it was a remake of the movie The Poseidon Adventure, about the ship that turns upside down and the people try to get out, you know.
Yep.
And Rutger Hauer, who is an action star, played a Catholic bishop. And I was waiting for him in this thing to turn out to be, you know, the nut or the bad guy, which is normally what they do. Just the exact opposite. He helped lead the people out of the ship, and there was a bunch of these big metal Christmas trees because it was Christmas time when this thing happened with the ship going upside down. And just when they're trying to figure out how to get further up, this big metal tree falls diagonally onto the side of the ship, and he goes, "I think God has shown us a way up there." And at the end of the movie, they've got to blow a hole in the side of the ship to get out. And he's the one who decides he's going to ignite the explosive, because this way he says, I'm you know, I don't have a family here, I don't have kids here, let me do it. Spoiler, he survived, by the way. But I was watching this going, yes, here's this Catholic bishop. He's the good guy. He's a strong guy. He does all this stuff. He makes good decisions. And, you know, in one scene, there's a woman who was supposed to be a very aged Olympian, a Jewish Olympian from Israel, who was in like the 19-something Olympics, a swimmer. She was swimming underwater to try to find the way out and come back and tell them. And she did, but it weakened her heart so much that she had a heart attack. And here's this older Jewish lady, and here's this Catholic bishop comforting her as she dies. It was incredible. Maybe we should find that one. You can show it to your gang.
Yeah, I was going to say, it'd be a good example of what a good holy man would do. Yeah, no, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, yeah,
that's great.
Yeah. Yeah, I was kind of watching this silly movie. I mean, it was, you know, it's a pot boiler, you know. But I'm sitting there watching this and I'm cheering. I'm going, yes, yes, because we don't get to see it. Now, that's very dramatic and Rutger Hauer and all this stuff. You know, he's a big type star. But there are heroics that go on big and small every single day. And we just don't always get a chance to even recognize them. And one of the fun parts of this show is we try to get people to talk about some of these things and make people realize that there are people in our religious family, including our Curia staff, by the way. I try to put a attaboy in. We have a bunch of people in the diocese and center who have been dedicated for years to doing stuff. And this is what happens. We now have, you know, your division there expanding and doing more things. We have Anne Langford was talking about her RCIA organization that she has put together a lot of the instructional manuals and things like that. All these things fit together to increase the experience of what it's like to be Catholic in the Diocese of La Crosse. We're working on a new studio to put in, nothing fancy, nothing expensive, so that we'll be able to do better broadcasts that sound good and better videos and things like that. All kinds of stuff that goes on, all with a relatively small staff, as you well know. But we've got a lot of good people there. So what's your day like? Like, you come into work and every day is different, I'm sure, but what do you do every day?
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, it's kind of like a dream job in the church, I would say. You know, I arrive and I immediately get to go to Mass with the guys in the group. And then after that, I give them a good 15 minutes for breakfast. They got to eat fast. I grew up in a big family. You had to eat fast. So I give them about 15 minutes to eat. Then we do classes till 11:30 noon. From about 9 to noon, we'll do classes. You know, pretty high level courses. I've taught in the universities before. And so, you know, we put them through a rigorous course. And of course, the first couple weeks, like as of right now, they're like, we're reading so much. After the first week, when, you know, it was just kind of like a honeymoon period here and there was no classwork, they're like, oh man, we're so bored. And now they're really busy, right? So now they're all complaining at the teacher. But after classes, then, you know, we get lunch. I get to eat lunch with the guys, sit and chat, you know, and my office, my door is always open for guys to be able to come in. And so, you know, they're coming in and out throughout the day, talking to myself, talking to Father Nate, just about, you know, we just want to see how they're doing. Right. And one of our first nights of formation that we do, we have a conversation with them about, they're not just allowed to say good or fine. Right. They have to actually express their feelings. And you know, this, like, as a guy, like, so, you know, how's things going? Good. right? No, we don't let them say that. They have to give us a little bit more of an explanation to that. And so, you know, they come, they talk to us, but then in the afternoons, depending on the day, it kind of changes. Mondays, we do formation in the afternoon, which is all sorts of just helping them become a better guy. Then on Tuesdays and Thursdays, we have them go out to the various schools in the area. We have a partnership with Viterbo University now. We send a couple guys there to help out with their campus ministry, sending them to Aquinas High School, Middle School, St. Pat's Elementary, and then Blessed Sacrament. We have guys spread out all around. And then on Wednesdays, a little bit different. So the guys have it's a day of spiritual direction and counseling. And so, like, again, getting the spiritual and the psychological elements, you know, helping them on both fronts become the best person that they're called to be, right? It's an amazing thing. And then on Fridays, you know, after class, they get to go. We have them help out with Glenn and Rory, you know, over in the maintenance staff over there at the diocese, because it's a big building, right? If anybody that drives by, you know, you just say, oh yeah, it's a big building behind High Rollers, and they all know what it's like. So just think about what it is to manage that place. And so we send the guys over, and hopefully they give them a little bit of a break, being able to make a light load of all the work that's going on over there. And then on the weekends, you know, it's on a rotating schedule. So, you know, it's always good to be able to have them go home, see their family, let them know how things are going. So we'll let them go. Either it's an open weekend, they get to kind of do whatever they want. Usually they go home. They have a parish weekend in which we assign them back to a parish throughout the diocese. We have them at their home parishes, help out there so that people in their own congregation can see them and pray for them. Otherwise, we have an in-house weekend. And a lot of the times what we're doing for that is, you know, we're going to different places, even though it's in-house. You know, I put that in quotes. You know, we're going to the Shrine. We're going to Our Lady of Good Help. We're going to visit the different seminaries in the area. You know, we're doing that sort of thing. So it's a busy time. And then, let's see, I was talking. Then all of a sudden we go to nights. You know, in the evenings, they have group dinners. So the diocese provides the guys with just fabulous meals. Man, oh man, they are good. And so we have supper together. And when I say we, I've been there for a couple of them, but I like Father Nate is good to my own vocation. Lets me get home with my family at that point. But they have a meal together, and then they have, you know, they talk as a group. They either have an activity as a group, whether that's basketball or football or frisbee, or they're really into a lot. We got a lot of guys that are hunters and fishers, so a lot of fishing stuff going on. So that's not my realm of things, but I'll let them have that. And then after that, they do night prayer together. And then hopefully, you know, as their teacher, hopefully they're using the rest of the time to be able to read and catch up on their work.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting. You mentioned that they spend some time with the maintenance crew at the Diocesan Center. Number one, the maintenance crew at the Diocesan Center are incredible.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
There are so many things that leak or need to be fixed or repaired, or as in the case of the studio that they're putting together for video work and some audio work. They're not building this thing from scratch, buying state-of-the-art everything, you know, online and putting it in. No, they're going into the basement, talking to the maintenance guy, saying, what can we use? Can we get this? They're building it with stuff that's down there already. But the idea is that, as we mentioned a little earlier in the show, the priest, once he's in a parish, will be needing to deal with the people who are maintaining at the parish and fixing things and dealing with the plumbing and dealing with the electricity and dealing with contractors, as Monsignor Gillis did so aptly for 2 years with the cathedral. So it's good for them to understand that you're not only going to be sitting in your you know, rectory writing something, you're going to be having to converse, to get stuff done. And if the people who are cleaning the pews and cleaning the confessionals and doing all the other stuff, if they know that you are one of them, you are with them, it goes a great deal of a long way to get your hands dirty too.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and that's what we try to tell them, you know, just because, you know, if, you know, God willing, you get the chrism put on your hands, it doesn't mean that you don't have to do work for the rest of your life, right? You get to be one of the people, you are there, and your relationships with them, especially those that kind of get overlooked, right? Those are the people that you got to invest in the most. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Because again, there's nothing beneath you. We try to tell them that time and time again. There's no job that's beneath you, especially as a priest. You are always there at service to others, whatever that looks like, whatever the job is.
look at Father Walayeski. There is pictures and videos of him from old movies of him down there in Peru helping to solid up some of the shacks that some of these people were living in. He's hammering, you know, some plywood up and putting up roofs and stuff. Yeah, he's just there doing it, you know, the hammer in his hand. And he, like I say, he is now, you know, he's up for sainthood. And that's not a small part of what he was doing, that he was there with the people. And they loved him for it. They absolutely loved him for it. It sounds like a remarkable situation going on. Let me backtrack a little bit. You mentioned you taught at the university. What kind of stuff were you teaching?
Yeah, so right before COVID, I was teaching up at St. Mary's University as an adjunct up there, teaching the religious studies course, one of the 101s and that sort of thing, which is my alma mater. So it was fun being back there and being able to teach. And then currently I teach for Viterbo and be an adjunct for a couple of online classes for them in the online world, which works really well with my schedule. So, you know, getting to put little videos out and getting to chat. And it's always good. I mean, I love those perspectives because, you know, with the university, and it helps me with these guys too, because I get to tell them kind of what it's like in the real world. You know, not everybody in the universities are Catholic. You know, a lot of them are taking my course because it's a requirement. And so I get all sorts of perspectives, and it is fantastic. It helps me. It has helped me grow in my own faith in being able to have conversations with these students. But at the same time, I get to bring that into my own classroom here with the guys being like, hey, like, this is what the pulse of the world is like right now. This is what you're going out into. And you got to be able to learn how to talk pastorally to them instead of just like, oh, here, I got an argument for you, because that doesn't work. So it has helped me tremendously to get to where I am currently.
Well, you're one talented guy, multifaceted. That's the kind of person that is sorely needed around here. Now, your buddy and former band member, or maybe current band member, Chris Rogers, is now doing a series of video series, and he is looking for people to chat with about various things. Has he tapped you on the shoulder yet?
Not yet. I was going to say, I just ran into him, you know, because I was like, again, kind of backtracking. Like, I was still supposed to be out with surgery for another... another 3-4 months.
Really?
But the fact that I'm back here, you keep talking about Walayeski, you give me on a different time, I'll tell you about that, because maybe what happened to me there is going to be his cause for canonization. That's we're crossing our fingers.
Now, of course, everybody listening is now saying, tell us the story.
Yeah, right.
We've got about 6 minutes. If you wish, it's up to you. We can save it for another time, and I'd be curious myself. But I mean, Chris had his thing that was I thought was darn near miraculous.
Yeah.
If you wish, and I'm not forcing you. If you tell us about this if you like.
Yeah. So back in January of this last year, 2022, I had a hip replacement because of athletics and things like that. You know, finally caught up to me. I'm not as young as I used to be, and so I had a hip replacement. And so after I took this job in July, you know, I'm down in Georgia, and I was leading a youth camp down there for Life Teen. And all of a sudden, on one of the last days, I stood up, and at this point, I was running around playing with the kids. I was back to my old self, and it was fantastic. All of a sudden, I got up from adoration that night. No joke, Jack. Like, I can't tell you, God works in some weird ways. That night, the whole thing was that they were supposed to put on a piece of paper something that they were going to give to God, right, over the next year. And I thought, I was like, gosh, I don't know of anything I'm going to give to God. And at that point, I just got the new job, and I wrote on a piece of paper, I wrote, you know, whatever comes this year. It's all I put. I put it up there. I stood up from adoration 10 minutes later. All of a sudden, I was like, man, my leg hurts. And then all of a sudden, I start walking down the hill, and I couldn't even pick up my leg anymore. That night was probably the worst pain I've ever had in my entire life. No joke. Even after surgery, it was the worst pain ever. Stayed down there for the next couple of days, got back. Doctors are like, man, you are really infected with something. They thought it was Lyme. They didn't really know. I was going back and forth on a bunch of things. Talked to my surgeon that did the operation in January. He got me in right away. He's like, you know, I think your hip's infected. If that's the case, we got to cut you open. We got to put the spacer in there. You're going to be laid up for at least, you know, 8 weeks. And then we have to replace everything. And you're going to have to do the whole surgery over again after those 8 weeks. And this is in September that he's telling me this, right? So they go in and, you know, he goes, but you're doing well. Like, I could have fooled you. Like, I was walking around acting normal at this point. I thought I was over it. They found some fluid in there and said, yeah, it's 100% infected, right? They said, yeah, we're going to have to take everything out. So I go and I'm crying because I'm like, oh, man, I just finally got my life back, being able to run around, being with my kids, got this new job. I went up to Father Dine. I was like, hey, this is what's going on. He was very considerate towards everything. He's like, absolutely, we're going to take care of you. And then he prayed over me. He's like, can I pray over you? Just as I was about to walk out. And he's like, he asked the intercession of Walieski, and what he said, the words were so great, Jack. He goes, I pray through the intercession of Walieski that when they cut him open, that everything is squeaky clean, right? Everything is clean. At this point, like, again, that shouldn't have happened. They found the fluid. It should have been, it was already corrupted, right? And then as we're walking out, the bishop happened to walk by. He also prays over me. And I go in for surgery the next day. Doctor comes in, very faithful guy. Know him from St. Pat's, had his kids in the youth group. He comes in, he goes, there's something yesterday. He goes, I just feel like I don't know. We're going to cut you open. And depending on what we find in there, you know, there's going to be a couple of different routes that we're going to take. But, you know, he goes, right now, infectious disease, everybody says, yeah, we're going to have to take everything out. You're going to have to be, it's going to be the long route. That's what we're planning on. Okay. So then he comes back in. He's like, hey, can we pray together? So we said Hail Mary and that sort of thing. We talked, and they put me into anesthesia just about. And they go, hey, we're just going to keep everything in a box because your surgeon thinks, has a feeling that things are not what they initially determined. I'm like, what? And then of course they put me under. So I'm asleep now, and I wake up and I'm like, okay, which one was it? Am I going to be down for, you know, a couple months? Am I going to be that they have to replace just parts of it? That they do nothing? And when he's talking to me, he goes, yeah, you're not going to believe this. Even though that this test said that you 100% corrupted, we're going to have to take everything out. He goes, we opened it up and there was nothing in there. Like they found nothing. They took swabs of the fluid before and afterwards, and they said nothing was growing. They said that it honestly was a miracle in itself. The fact that I was able to be in and out with no replacements whatsoever. They said, this doesn't happen, Andrew. I'm like, all right. And so, you know, I'm telling people all the prayers, and you know, and that's the thing. I was in a hospital for 5 days just because of precautions, but otherwise I was up and walking. I was already back to work the next week. It was insane.
Andrew, you know, there is the slightest possibility that you've got the documentation, you know, the tests, the medical stuff is verified, et cetera, before and after. Wouldn't it be amazing if this experience of yours was part of the reason that Father Joe becomes a saint?
Yeah, I mean, when Father died, he called me up and he's like, hey, how's it going? And, you know, he just goes, so you got documentation and all that stuff going on? He goes, you know, I got a hunch. Maybe we could use it for Walieski. I went, no way.
Yeah.
Like, for me, I kept calling it a mini miracle. And, you know, I had my mom and other friends be like, no, there's no such thing as a mini miracle. Like, this is an absolute miracle in itself. So yeah, it'd be absolutely wild, Jack.
Prayers are important, and prayers do work, and saints do work for you, don't they?
Absolutely.
Just amazing. Andrew, I know you have to go on some, drop your daughter off someplace today, so we're going to let you go now, so you have plenty of time. But what a wonderful hour this has been, talking to you about what you're doing. And frankly, to cap it off with your story, I thought that Chris's story was amazing also. Boy, I'll tell you, I'm, you know, you talk about just things that strengthen your belief in prayer and God and all those kind of things. If that isn't one of them, I don't know what is. So, Andrew, we will talk to you again soon. Any final things you want to say before we leave?
I was going to say, anybody that's listening to this, if you know a guy that's discerning, you know, guy or woman that's discerning, you know, give us a call here at the vocations office. We'd be happy to, you know, talk to you, have you come see the program for what it is. Again, God's calling you to do amazing things, and hopefully we can help you discern.
Amazing. Andrew, thank you so much. We will talk to you again, okay?
All right. Thanks so much, Jack.
The Diocese of La Crosse has spent a fair amount of time, not a lot of money, but a fair amount of time and thinking about putting together a website that has all kinds of things for all kinds of people. DIOLC.org. You can hear homilies. You can hear excerpts from masses. You can hear all kinds of things. There are classes that you can take, that you can watch and listen and enjoy, all at no charge. And of course, there's calendars updating what's going on around the diocese. All the information you can possibly imagine in a nicely laid out form. We have a wonderful graphics department. Danelle does a lot of the work, and boy, she is good at what she does. Pretty looking diocese, pretty looking website. And using a lot of surplus stuff that's in the basement of the Diocesan Center, we're building a little studio. We just did a little test run on it this week to hear how it sounded, and it's pretty good. So the various guests can come in and just sit down, turn on the mic, and we can record them. It's very nice. But the other thing I would invite you to avail yourself of is the fact that we have a prayer request form. There's no charge for it. You can remain anonymous, and it's very easy to fill out. Believe me, our bishop and our staff and our priests believe in the power of prayer. We've been hearing a bit of that on today's show. And so if there's something you would need someone to pray about, it can be something that you think is important to you or for someone else. Doesn't matter. I mean, it's something that you think is needing of prayer. Go to diolc.org and locate the prayer request form and just type it in. And believe me, it doesn't just get dropped into a shoebox someplace. Someone will take a look at it. Our bishop will include it in his prayers as well. Again, there's no charge for it. And also, it's open to anybody. You don't even have to be Catholic. And you can just be someone who says, you know, I need someone to say some prayers on my behalf, or maybe say some prayers for me. It all starts by going to diolc.org. One of the many great things you'll see at our diocesan website at diolc.org.
Jesus proclaimed a point at which we might never arrive. The kingdom of God is here. It is so immense we cannot understand it, but when we brush up against it, it knocks our socks off. This was what gives us all hope. Let us not give up on hope. In the midst of darkness, we are called to be the light of Christ.
Jack Soshi here with you on the final few minutes of Connecting the Diocese for this week. That little clip there was from the distinguished professor of servant leadership, Tom Thibodeau from Viterbo University, talking about the very lofty and esoteric idea of getting your socks knocked off by God. And by golly, I was going to say by God, but maybe by golly will do for now. By golly, that last bit with Andrew telling me his story knocked my socks off. And I hope it did for you too. I am no expert on canonization and sainthood. I do recall from previous shows, talking to people who do know more about it than I do, that this is not a very simple, cut-and-dried, slam-dunk process. Number one, the decision as to whether what just happened with Andrew is verifiable and usable, that's not up to the parish, that's not up to the diocese, that's not up to the bishops in the USA. It goes all the way up to the Vatican. And there are people who will be the postulator, who will present the case. It is a slow and painstaking process, but if something comes along in this direction, I'll be certainly letting you know. Don't forget, you can go and listen to the previous 100 shows by going to diolc.org/connecting, and you can drop us a note at connecting@diolc.org. Again, thank you so much for listening. Tell your friends, we'd love having more folks tuned in every time, and I'll see you again next week. Here's a little music and comments to take us out.
The life of a contemplative, the life of a consecrated virgin, the life of a priest, the life of a married couple, to be single in the world, all of those are gifts. Vocation is gift. Nobody earns it. God gives us the graces that we need for whatever vocation that He calls us to.
The ability of people to come to Mass, to participate in the sacraments, to truly use the church for everything that they possibly can in terms of all the benefits that are provided for their souls, the peace of mind, the comfort, the solace, the ability to know that they are loved by God, to know that in each and every heart, the seed of God's love speaks most eloquently. And the church is a voice for that. The church is a means by which they can come into contact most vividly and extraordinarily the presence of God in their lives.
In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen. Christ be with me. Christ within me, Christ behind me, Christ before me, Christ beside me, Christ to win me, Christ to comfort and restore me, Christ beneath me, Christ above me, Christ in quiet, Christ in danger, Christ in hearts of all that love me, Christ in mouth of friend and stranger. I bind myself unto thy name, the strong name of the Trinity, by invocation of the same, the three in one, the one in three, of whom all nature hath creation, eternal Father, Spirit, Word. Praise to the Lord of my salvation. Salvation is of Christ the Lord. And may the blessing of Almighty God, the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit descend upon you and remain with you forever.